This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Najeo, and we're going to be talking about menopause, a period of life for most women that happens between the ages of 45 and 55. And menopause is just different for every woman, but the symptoms can include hot flashes, difficult sleeping, memory problems, and that's just a few. Well, here to answer your questions about menopause is Dr. Jenna Sarvadio. She is an endocrinologist with the Frederick and Medical College of Wisconsin Inclusion Clinic. Dr. Sarvadio is also a professor with the Medical College of Wisconsin and North American Menopause Society certified practitioner. What would you like to know about menopause? Maybe you know someone who's going through it right now. Do you have questions about what they're going through? Well, we want to hear from you. 800-642-1234 or send us an email at WPR.org. Dr. Sarvadio, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So we're going to talk about menopause. Now, let's just, for those who are maybe a little unfamiliar about it, what actually happens?
Sure. So menopause, in the U.S., it's typically around the age of 51 or 52 years old. And it's when a woman gets their final menstrual period. So the ovaries stop making estrogen, or they make very little of it, and it leads to some symptoms, sometimes more bothersome for some women than others. Women can start experiencing hot flashes, mood changes, something that we don't necessarily feel, but our bones could be losing density and potentially increasing our risk for increased fractures. So that's essentially what menopause is. And typically by the age of 55, 95% of women have reached menopause.
So do we know, do you have any research on how some people are going to react to menopause? How some women, are there any, like, are there differences in race, their differences in, you know, food they eat or where they were raised?
Oh, good question. So I'm not really aware of any research that predicts who's going to have a harder menopause than others. I have seen some literature that you might follow the trajectory of perhaps your mom. So if mom went through a more difficult menopause, that might mean that you will too, or you know, maybe if she sailed through it with less problem, that's, you know, a good foreshadowing for what you might go through.
Okay. I've kind of experienced that with some of my friends and whatnot, too. So that makes a lot of sense. Now, we've heard of perimenopause. What is that?
Yeah, so perimenopause is around the menopause. So it's the years that come before it, and so typically it's in the late 40s for most women, but it could start earlier. And that's when, you know, the ovaries are not working as well as they did. So women can experience irregular bleeding. You know, the periods might become lighter, less heavy. Mood changes could start happening. Hot flashes can happen during perimenopause. But going back to that definition of menopause, that's really the final menstrual period. So we don't diagnose menopause until a woman has been 12 months without their period. So all the years preceding that, when they might get their period, you know, every other month, or, you know, might go 4 months without any bleeding, that would be considered more of a perimenopause.
Okay. And what are some of, we hear about, you know, the hot flashes and whatnot, but what are some of the other things that are going on in the body when it's going through menopause?
So, so there's probably a lot of things going on because estrogen affects a lot of parts of our bodies. So again, like the bone loss that I mentioned earlier, we see a decrease in bone density. We can also, you know, after menopause, the risk of heart disease goes up for women. So before menopause, we have a decreased risk of heart disease compared to men. But after menopause, that risk goes up. So there's definitely cardiovascular changes that are going on in a woman. Like I said, like the mood changes. So there's a lot of things that way going on, probably with the neurochemistry in our brains. There's absolutely skin changes. So collagen is affected by estrogen. There's a change in hair. So a lot of women experience these things. They can see and feel the changes. What else? Cholesterol absolutely is changed after menopause with that decrease in estrogen. So we see an increase in LDL, which is that bad cholesterol.
Mm-hmm. But are there any good things? You know, this sounds just absolutely horrible. But are there some good things? I mean, maybe not during, but like postmenopausal. Is there something to look forward to?
Oh, yeah, well, gosh, absolutely. I mean, some of these changes are subtle. So it's not like, you know, your whole world comes crashing down. You know, there are things that we can do medically to help women that are suffering. We have three reasons to treat women with hormone therapy. So as an endocrinologist, that's really where I focus. So if a woman is having bothersome hot flashes, and especially if they're losing sleep, we can treat with, and I can talk more about that, but we can treat with hormones, and that's definitely the most effective treatment for hot flashes. Hormone therapy can also prevent bone loss. And another thing that I didn't mention yet is vaginal dryness. And we typically call that genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And so hormone therapy is very effective for that as well. And if a woman is not a candidate for hormones, we can use non-hormone therapy. So there's a few medical therapies that may help if hormones are not an option.
So who would not want to take hormones?
Sure. So we have a list. I would say that you want to speak to your doctor, because some items on this list that I'll cite, you know, are more absolute, and some are more relative contraindications. So you want to find, you know, what your provider really thinks for you. But typically, if a woman comes in, you know, they're at around the age of menopause, perimenopause, or not perimenopause, if they're menopausal, if they haven't bled for 12 months, and then they start having this unexplained vaginal bleeding, that definitely needs to be worked up before any hormones are considered for the symptoms of menopause. If a woman has severe active liver disease, we probably wouldn't give hormones. Estrogen-sensitive breast and endometrial cancers, we don't typically prescribe hormones for that group of women. If a woman has heart disease, stroke, dementia, a clotting disorder, so if she personally has had clots or knows that she carries some kind of hereditary disease that predisposes her, we might not use hormones. If there are really high triglycerides, we might not use estrogen, but that's one of the examples of the relative contraindication. So we would look at how high are the triglycerides, and, you know, we can use different formulations of estrogen, and patch therapy really doesn't affect triglycerides as much as oral therapy does. So, the other things that I would just point out is that if a woman has endometriosis, it could worsen with hormones. Same thing with migraines. So migraine headaches could worsen. And then if a woman knows that she has something called leiomyomas, which are growths on the uterus, these could also grow on hormone therapy.
And if someone is not experiencing any of the symptoms, do they need to have hormone therapy?
No.
Okay.
So there's really three reasons to treat with hormones. Otherwise, we wouldn't. And I could go into that more, too. But the three main reasons to consider hormone therapy would be bothersome hot flashes. If a woman does have osteoporosis, then we could prevent bone loss. And then, again, that genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And the other thing I just want to say here, though, is that if a woman goes through menopause earlier than age 40, and so that's typically called premature ovarian insufficiency, we really would want them to go on hormones, because we do have more data that in that group of women, we could be decreasing the risk of heart disease. And we would want them to have, you know, as much hormones as their peers do for health purposes. And then premature menopause is before the age of 45. So if a woman is, you know, not having her period for a full year at the age of 42, 43, we really might want to consider hormones.
Okay. So definitely something that needs to be talked about with your physician.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, we're talking with Dr. Jenna Sarvadio. She's an endocrinologist with the Frederick and Medical College of Wisconsin Inclusion Clinic, and she's a North American Menopause Society certified practitioner. What questions do you have about menopause? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, because we'll be right back after this look at the news. We're talking about menopause today on The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Glad you're with us on the Ideas Network. Our guest today is Dr. Jenna Sarvadio. She's an endocrinologist with the Frederick and Medical College of Wisconsin Inclusion Clinic. Have you or someone you know experienced menopause? What was it like for you? How are you managing the symptoms? Well, give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Dr. Sarvadio, we do have a caller from Milwaukee who has a question. Hi, Jane. What can we help you with?
Oh, hi. I have a question for the doctor. My gynecologist said to stay on hormones, and I've been on them since I was on birth control, and I'm now 72, and I've really had good health. What does the doctor feel about extending the use of hormone replacement therapy to people in general, as long as they don't have any risk factor? That is not just for women who have problems going through menopause. And I'll take my answer off there. Okay.
Thank you, Jane. Doctor?
Hi, Jane. Thanks for the question. So I think if I heard it correctly, the question was, how do I feel about hormones for all women, that especially those that don't have hot flashes, bone loss, or vaginal dryness, correct?
I believe that was her question, yes. Oh, Jane, okay. Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay.
I said yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Okay, great. So there was... I'll try to make this brief, but so in the 2000s, women were on hormone therapy. I think up to about 40% of our population in the U.S. was on hormones because it was believed that they decreased the risk of heart disease. So a large randomized study that you might be familiar with called the Women's Health Initiative was done. And it was designed to answer the question whether hormones decrease the risk of heart disease. And so there was about roughly 10,000 women in each arm of the study. And the arms were women with a uterus and women without a uterus. So women with a uterus, we use estrogen plus progesterone. Women without a uterus, we can just use estrogen. And unfortunately, the study was stopped early because of in the women with a uterus, the estrogen plus progesterone arm, we saw an increased risk of breast cancer. And then that was stopped first. And then the second study of estrogen, or not the second study, but the second arm of the study was stopped a little.
Oh, I believe we lost the doctor, and she will be back as soon as we can get her on the phone. That was interesting. Not sure what happened there, but we will definitely give her a call back. And while we have a minute, I just wanted to remind you that we're going to be live from Bayfield in Bloom on Friday. Larry will be back from his vacation tomorrow. And then we're going to be heading up there. And we've got a panel of experts who will be taking your gardening questions, just like our doctors taking your medical questions. And those include perennials, annuals, vegetables, and trees also. So that'll be fun. And if you're in the area, please definitely stop by. We would love to see you and talk to you. We've got a meet and greet right after. So please consider doing that. And I think we've got the doctor back. Yay. Thank you, everybody. We really appreciate that. No problem. It happens. So continue. Okay. We had Jane with that question. Did you have some more info for her?
Yes. Yeah. So I think where the call got dropped was just when I was saying that the second part of the study was stopped in the estrogen alone group because of an increase in stroke. So all of that being said, you know, we're a little bit less, we need a good reason. We need to make sure that benefits outweigh risk. And so we don't want to put anyone and everyone on hormones because we do know that they could carry an increased risk for health issues. But the Women's Health Initiative used a different type of estrogen than we typically use today. They used a different formulation, a different route of administration. There were differences in this trial, more than I will say right now, than how we clinically currently practice. So, you know, I think that there needs to be a good reason to be on hormone therapy. I wouldn't just give it to a woman that's having, you know, no perceived issues. So I guess the short answer is, you know, no, I wouldn't just give hormones, but I would definitely look at the person, and there's other things besides hot flashes that I would consider hormones for.
Okay. So in Jane's case, since she's been on them for quite some time, is that a conversation she should have with her doctor at this point?
Yeah. So great. I didn't get Jane's age, and you don't
in
have
her
to
70s.
Share it.
It was in her 70s.
Oh,
I believe 70s. She said,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we like to prescribe hormones for a shorter amount of time. But if someone is in their 70s and they're still having hot flashes, and hormones are the only treatments that's helping them, we could consider continuing on. I would probably prefer patch therapy over pills. I don't know if she's still on birth control pills. But yeah, I mean, typically we try to have women come off hormones once they're in their 70s at
okay.
least.
Great. All right. Thank you for that call. And we do have Maggie from Mount Horeb who has a question too. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. I was wondering if the doctor could address for women who, for example, have an IUD and are not having periods, how they would judge their menopausal status, since lots of women still have IUDs in their 40s. I'm guessing there would still be estrogen, the kind of withdrawal symptoms, but wondering what that looks like.
Great.
Excellent question. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Maggie. So we could do a blood test. Menopause really is a clinical diagnosis, so it's that no period for 12 months. But with an IUD in place, when women aren't really bleeding, and let's say they are having some of those estrogen withdrawal symptoms, like they're starting to have hot flashes or other things that are going on, for curiosity might help make the diagnosis, we could do a blood test called a follicle stimulating hormone, or the acronym is FSH. And that level goes up. It's a hormone that comes from our pituitary gland in our brain. And that's the signal that talks to our ovaries to make estrogen and progesterone. And so when that level goes up, I usually explain to people that, you know, your brain is trying to get your ovaries to work, and they're not working well. So the level goes up because it's trying harder. The caveat is that FSH goes up when we're ovulating. And so you really need more than just one FSH level to tell you what's going on.
Okay, thank you very much for that question. We've got a number of emails here that we probably want to take a look at. Cassandra has heard some girls start their periods earlier than what was considered normal. Would early menstruation cause early menopause? And does menopause mean that the egg cells have been or are nearly depleted?
Yes, okay. Great question. Again, all these questions are really good. So I have seen, you know, I can't say that I'm very knowledgeable in like the epidemiology of menopause, but I feel like I have seen some literature where if you start menses earlier, you could go through, maybe in earlier menopause, but I would have to double check on that answer. And I'm happy to do it, and then we can email you back. And then the second question, remind me what this one was again.
Does menopause mean that the eggs that...
Yeah,
they're nearly depleted or have been depleted?
Yes. Excellent. So it does. So another... symptom, if you will. It's not really a symptom, but women don't get pregnant after menopause. Of course, if you're in perimenopause, you could get pregnant, but if you are truly in menopause, your eggs should be depleted, and there is a hormone level that we can check for that too. And going back to Maggie's question, also another hormone that I could get from someone's blood is called an anti-Mullerian hormone, or AMH. And that's a hormone that comes out of the follicles that house our eggs and our ovaries. And so if that level is very low, that means that there's not a lot of follicles, not a lot of eggs, and another suggestion that a woman is in menopause.
Okay, great. Christopher sent us an email, and he's wondering about the relationship between hysterectomy and menopause, both with and without the removal of ovaries.
So a woman could get a hysterectomy for various reasons, and the key is whether their ovaries have been removed or not. So if the ovaries are left in place, then a woman... Again, just like a woman having an IUD, it would be difficult to tell when exactly she's in menopause because she's not bleeding. But she would follow the natural trajectory of menopause. So again, around the age of 51, 52, that would probably be the time that her ovaries stop functioning. Now, a woman that has her ovaries taken out for various reasons, or a woman that has undergone chemo or radiation and it might have destroyed the ovary, that might fall under the lines of premature menopause if it's younger than age 45, or it could be, again, that premature ovarian insufficiency, which is younger than 40. And so we'd have to look at the woman, but, you know, we might want to consider hormone therapy in that population.
Okay.
If the woman's younger.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer the question?
I think so. I didn't ask it, so I'm not sure, but it sounded like it to
it
me.
Seems like, okay, good.
another listener called but couldn't stay with us, and they wanted to hear more about the weight gain associated with menopause. Is that a problem?
Oh, yes.
Yes, I didn't mention it. I'm sorry I didn't, but weight gain is a problem. I hear about it all the time clinically. I see it, you know, I believe it. So I have read that women after menopause typically gain about 5 pounds. My patients have told me they see it like around the midsection, like more in their tummy, and it's really difficult to lose. So the thing here is that hormone therapy does not seem to decrease weight. So again, another reason I wouldn't start hormones. We think that it has something to do with a decrease in metabolism. So in some way that I don't believe has been fully elucidated, I think that estrogen does probably affect something that has to do with our metabolism. And so the really frustrating advice that I have to give, because I don't have anything better right now, is that we have to decrease our calories even more and be more active maybe than we used to be. That is really the best advice I can give for weight management after menopause.
Yeah, not great. Great news, but unfortunately, that is the way it is. Now, one of the things that I think probably most people think about when they think about menopause is the hot flashes. Now, besides the estrogen, what are some of the other things that people can do when they're suffering with these hot flashes?
Certainly. So lifestyle changes are key. You know, I think we just have to make sure, and I hope most of the time it sort of goes without saying, but if the hot flashes are occurring at night, which are typically called night sweats, then we'd want to make sure that the person is sleeping in a cool environment. You know, they've already, you know, adjusted their pajamas and their blankets and all of that stuff. And if they're happening during the day, like, is the woman keeping, you know, perhaps a fan close by, or just wearing more layering of clothes so she can remove, you know, a long sleeve or something like that. So lifestyle changes are number one. And then after that, there are non-hormonal therapies that we can do that are not as effective, but we can certainly try them, especially, like, let's say in a woman that has estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, we can't use hormones. So we want to try some other things that might make life a little bit more, easier.
Sure. What about diet, what we eat, is there anything, you know, exercise, does that help with hot flashes or not?
So it might in an indirect way. I do believe that there's research that obesity can actually worsen hot flashes. So women that are more obese, they could have a tougher time. And so working on weight management might help that way.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of actually, you know, I am not aware of any literature on a certain diet that one should follow that would result in less hot flashes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. And she, let's see here, a listener sent us an email and she wonders, how long will hot flashes and sleep disruptions last? And should you talk to your doctor if they last for more than a year or 2 years, 5 years? What should she expect?
Sure. Yeah. So I have seen anywhere from, and there's been a number of studies that have looked at this. And so I've seen anywhere from 2 to 10 years. So I think that a woman just needs to, if she's having hot flashes you still there?
Yep, we're still there.
that part. Okay, good. So after 1 year,
I wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't raise up any red flags that there is something wrong. But if you're struggling, you might not need to struggle. So yes, I would see the doctor, but it could just be the natural way of things. So anywhere from 2 to 10 years, I've seen averages of 5 years, 7 years, so kind of different numbers, but I hope that gives you some kind of idea.
Okay, great. And you brought up a point where it's you don't have to struggle. I think a lot of times society just assumes that, you know, menopause is the way it is. You just have to deal with it and don't whine. Is that kind of what you see sometimes?
Yes, I've seen it. And I think that we have things that we can do for people, and you don't have to whine, but you also don't have to be miserable. And, you know, if there's a woman out there that's losing sleep and they feel like they're, you know, that's taking a toll on their job or their family life, their home life, then absolutely talk to your provider. And, you know, if your provider is not comfortable with the management of menopause, the North American Menopause Society has an excellent website so women can educate themselves on what might be out there. And there's also a list of menopause providers. I think you can put in your zip code and you can find all of us in the area that would be happy to see you to discuss what's going on.
Okay, great. And we'll put up a link to that on our program notes. So you just go to WPR.org/Larry, and under today's show, we'll have a link there. But give us a little bit to get that up. But thanks for that information. And one thing we didn't touch on a whole lot, a listener wrote in about, and they were wondering what sexual changes happen after menopause. We've got about 2 minutes.
So low libido can happen. So women can have less sexual desire after menopause, and vaginal dryness is definitely an issue. So sometimes it's that, you know, sex is not comfortable anymore. It could actually be painful. And so I would see a provider for that as well. You know, I talk more and I prescribe more systemic hormone therapy, but there's actually localized hormone therapy as well and other agents that we can use just for the vaginal tissues.
Okay, great. Thank you for that email and for all of the great emails. And I'm going to leave with this last one from Sue in Fish Creek, who couldn't stay with us, but she says, never wear turtlenecks if you're going through hot flashes. Good, very good advice, Sue. So, thank you very much for that. And Dr. Jenna Sarviedo, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. Dr. Jennifer Sarviedo is an endocrinologist with the Frederick and Medical College of Wisconsin Inclusion Clinic and assistant professor with the Medical College of Wisconsin. She also is a North American Menopause Society certified practitioner, and we do have that link up on our website. So please go there and click on that and get a lot more information. Join us tomorrow. Scott Craven is back along with Larry to talk about wildlife encounters, frogs, and summer bird feeding. That's tomorrow on the Ideas Network. Hope you can join us. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Stay well.